Hi, Blue Wire listeners. I'm Greg Olson. I'm excited to partner with Blue Wire to bring you TE1, a podcast where I interview the tight ends who have revolutionized the position. Listen in as I have raw, in-depth conversations with the all-time greats like Shannon Sharp, Tony Gonzalez, Travis Kelce, and George Kittle. We'll explore how the tight end position has changed over the last 60 years and what it takes to be the very best. Subscribe to TE1 from Blue Wire Studios today so you're ready for the August premiere.
Hey there, welcome to the Eurostep, a Milwaukee Bucks podcast, part of the Blue Wire Podcast Network, brought to you today by Deal Dash and Bet Online. My name is Ty Windisch. I am here, as always, with the incredible, fantastic Rohan Kadi, here directly following the Bucks' third and final scrimmage game, the worst one yet by far. But we will talk a little bit about this game and a lot about our scrimmage takeaways in general. Rohan, how's it going?
I'm just flattered by that intro. My goodness. I feel all warm and fuzzy right now.
I just feel like when you're the person who starts it off, if you have to introduce people, you got to do it big. Let's get the listeners excited. It's not just me, people. Don't just tune out because you just hear my voice again. We got Rohan here, too. It's like, it's a big moment.
You know what? I'm happy that it can be a big moment for me to be here.
Me too.
But yeah, as we did just wrap up the scrimmages, the Milwaukee Bucks did, their final of the three. They unfortunately did lose this game. So my LeVar meme of undefeated in the bubble is dead for now. For now, we'll see what happens later. But unfortunately, they did fall to the Pelicans 124-103. And what was, we'll get into it obviously during this episode, but it seemed to be like sort of an game. It felt like these just feel like preseason games, to be honest. Like they essentially are.
They super are, but it's weird because the first two, they felt like the team, the Bucks, felt really into it. And I'm glad you said it was an game. Because even early, like, the Bucks start off on an 11-0 run. They're just beating the crap out of the Pelicans. But in fairness, New Orleans was generating some pretty decent three-point looks and just not really knocking them down. But even early, like, in some of those misses when they were up 11-0, like, the closeouts on really, like, quality three-point shooters, like Nicolo Melli, who that's pretty much all he does is shoot threes. And Giannis is just kind of like, I'll close out, I guess, like, guys are not running out to contest shooters that well. At one point, Wes Matthews gets cut in between two shooters and kind of just like curls away from the ball.
He crossed himself up.
Yeah,
he broke his own ankles.
He really did. But I don't know. It's just to me, my whole vibe from this game, and let's put respect on Giannis's name up front because we forget to do so often. 30 points in 23 minutes is just like one of those all-time, like, how did he get 30 points? Like, he was at 20 through 20 minutes, and he comes in for a final few-minute run and picks up 10 quick points. But it just felt like the Bucks were kind of – I think part of it was I think they're kind of over these scrimmage games. I think this was, like, play-calling-wise and what they actually ran. I think this was by far their worst of the three games. There was a lot of lazy offense being run and just lazy defense being executed. And I think losing the ball handlers that the Bucks are down right now really started to finally take a toll. Obviously, still no Eric Bledsoe and Dante DiVincenzo, although we do have news on those. I will
Pat
let Connaughton. Rohan. Or what? I said Dante, didn't I?
Yeah.
Excuse me. Pat Connaughton and Eric Bledsoe, who are now with the Bucks in the bubble, but not playing yet, which makes sense because why rush anybody back? And also, we were out Frank Mason and Marvin Williams in this game. Do you want to do more game takeaway stuff or dive into the injuries and inactives first?
Oh, we can dive into the injuries and inactives first. Yeah, like you said, we had Marvin Williams and Frank Mason out. Frank Mason missing his second consecutive scrimmage, which is a little concerning.
Yeah.
Considering that even Thanasis, who missed the last scrimmage, was able to get back in and play in the last few minutes of this game against the Pelicans. But Marvin Williams being out with a groin injury, I think is what it was listed as.
Yeah.
Which... is it a groin injury? Is it like a rest sort of thing?
Right.
Who knows?
Right.
Because I think, like, what was it? Sunday when the Trailblazers played, Chris Haynes of Yahoo Sports tweeted that Damian Lillard would get a rest game. And then the Trailblazer said he had like an injury, which is why he was out. So I don't know how much I trust these injury designations. But then again, I'm not really one to speculate here because I don't know all the information. But hopefully it's nothing serious. Otherwise, I feel like we would know a little more if it was a little more serious.
Yeah, I felt the same way you did. You know, I was kind of reading over the injury stuff and seeing that Bledsoe and Connaughton were out made a ton of sense. Very, very glad, by the way. They're both healthy. I mean, they didn't play, but they're healthy. They're doing fine. They are obviously past their testing positive for COVID and rejoining the team in the bubble, which is terrific. But just, I mean, this game literally doesn't matter. The seeding games barely matter. This game absolutely doesn't. So good to see them back with the team. But so, you know, that was like, okay, yeah, fine. They're not playing. That makes sense. The Marvin Williams thing, I read initially the same way as you, and I haven't changed my mind yet. Like, I just think maybe he's got something that's sore at, you know, after you've played in the NBA for 10 plus years, I bet you have a lot of stuff that's sore every day. And this is not a game that there was any need to push him to play in. So I don't think this is some serious thing that came up out of nowhere. The Frank Mason thing is a real bummer. I haven't really heard anything more about it than just that he hasn't played. And I mean, I wouldn't think it's like a very serious long-term thing. He's still in the bubble and like being with the team and everything, but it's just a bummer that he's missing these two games in particular, because you got to imagine these would be like two of the biggest opportunities for him to play real minutes with the Bucks for the rest of this whole season. I mean, maybe he'll get, if he's healthy again, he'll get some like end of seeding game minutes, especially later, or maybe not even later if the Bucks are ramping up to get ready for the playoffs. But like, he missed, unfortunately for him, not by any fault of his own, really good opportunity to play some minutes, which is unfortunate for Frank Mason.
It really is. What's interesting about this is we don't get to see any sort of quote-unquote preseason scrimmages from Bledsoe or Connaughton at all.
Yeah.
Which is, again, like you said, it's understandable that we don't get to see this. But the first time we're probably going to see them is when the games actually count, which is, I guess this kind of gets into debate. Does it really count, the seeding games for Milwaukee?
You know how I feel.
They don't. Like, we have until the second round of the playoffs, until the Bucks really need have games that really matter. I don't know. I think it's interesting. Obviously, it's good to play it safe here in these situations because they need to ramp back up into basketball shape and actually, you know, play basketball with this team because they haven't even been able to get on the court with them yet, I think, right? They might have practiced. I think they definitely practiced, but they didn't scrimmage.
They did a very light practice today, I thought, right?
I think so.
Yeah, so I think they like just starting to work everybody back in.
Yeah, so there's a chance we might not even see those two in the first game against the Celtics, which, I don't know, how do you think that'll play out?
I think they'll play. I think both of them will play by then, just because there's such a layoff. They don't play Boston until Friday. So personally, I just think they've both been with the team for at least a day or two by tonight as we speak on Monday. I mean, they'll have just about a full weekend by Friday, and I don't think we'll see like 35 minutes of Eric Bledsoe, but I think we'll see probably get the start too, just to kind of return that sense of normalcy to the team and get him used to playing, you know, in at least some of those lineups. I don't think he's going to play a ton of minutes. But honestly, I've been surprised at how many minutes the main contributors, Chris and Giannis, played in every game of the scrimmages. So maybe he will get up to like 20 minutes, Eric Bledsoe, in this game. And Pat Connaughton, I mean, who knows? He's not playing 30-plus minutes normally anyway, so he might be able to return to just about his normal role. It's hard to say.
Who knows? Sterling Brown might have taken his spot.
You know what? That's a good segue. I want to talk about like the younger guys, the unproven guys on the roster who did get some time to play. We already talked about Frank Mason, or I did a bit. I thought he looked good in his extended run at the end of the first scrimmage. Unfortunately, he didn't play again. I guess we can end these like, did the scrimmage minutes change your mind or at least like sort of further give you more information or more of a feel about any of these young guys? Let's start with Frank Mason. We had the least to go off of. How did that first game resonate with you?
It actually resonated really well. He showed that he has capable NBA skills as a capable role player, which he has in the past, and obviously he honed those skills winning G League MVP this season. So he really proved to me that he belongs on an NBA floor. And again, like you said earlier, it's just such a bummer that he didn't get to play after those scrimmages. But who knows? He could play during the seeding games if they're not serious, like you mentioned earlier. But I just, he proved to me that he's just, he belongs.
Yeah, I think so too. And I think fortunately with the way two-way contracts work, spending enough time with the NBA team will qualify a two-way guy for restricted free agency. And Frank, it's not like a judgment call, but I think he certainly spent enough time with the Bucks even before the bubble, and now that he's there every single day, I would think he easily hits that mark, and the league might look at kind of accepting others in that role just because obviously the season got shut down. So the Bucks will be in a very advantageous place to keep Frank Mason if they would like to do so as the third point guard if they actually want to use a 15-man roster spot on him. Again, it would have been great to see him play more. Hopefully he does get a little bit more run in the seeding games, not in the actual playoff games, I wouldn't think. But, yeah, I wouldn't say that I didn't watch this and go, he needs to play, you know, rotation minutes this run. But I agree with you. It was really nice to see him look good out there with the Bucks after some not-so-great run earlier in the normal regular season.
Yeah, for sure. I guess after Frank Mason, probably. Do you want to, let's save him. DJ Wilson, probably?
Yeah, I was going to say, let's save Sterling for last. I don't know, man.
He might not be good.
Yeah, it's tough. I feel like he's come a long way mindset-wise. And I think, he was a much better professional in the G League this year than he was 2 years ago or in years past. He really tries out there with the Bucks. I mean, he's really working his ass off on defense, and he's fine defensively. I don't think it's not like prime Andre Robertson or anything. Like, he's a fine defender. He's puts himself in pretty good positions. I think there could be something interesting there. I don't think the Bucks will ever see what it is because they just don't have the minutes. And at this point, I just don't think – it doesn't seem like either the team or he wants to spend a ton of time in the G League, just a game here or there to stay sharp. But the question really is, like, stay sharp for what? And I don't think it's a lot of time with the Bucks. He got assigned, like, a week before the trade deadline, and I really thought there was something to that when it happened this season. Obviously, nothing did. But DJ Wilson does have another year left on the contract. I don't even know if we'll see him around next season. It just feels like the fit isn't there. He's never really had sustained positive run with the Bucks on the NBA floor.
He had that like 1 month and a half. What was that last season from like December to January?
Yeah, like kind of scattered month and a half,
yeah,
right?
I guess. Yeah. His shooting kind of trailed off at the end there. Yeah. But just we saw the defensive tools he had and we all, like Bucks fans, we got just tantalized by like, oh, this guy might be something, And now, just like, this is the problems with having a team that's as talented as Milwaukee. You don't get a lot of opportunities to play your young guys, and that kind of halts their development, especially when it's a player who, like you mentioned, he was more professional about it this year, doesn't really seem keen on being in the G League.
No, certainly not before.
Yeah, so once if you're in that position, you don't really have any room to grow. So we saw those tools, but we never saw them get utilized. And it seems like, he's still young. So there's like, you don't want to give up on a young player, especially when you know he has some talent. But it just, nothing is being put together and there's not going to be a big role for him on this team. And just like he played 13 minutes. I get it. It's a scrimmage. It's the third scrimmage after like 4.5 months off of basketball. But he had like 13 minutes in this game against who's like the best big on the Pelicans? Jackson Hayes?
Favors is good, but I don't know if they overlap that much.
Yeah, when I was watching, they didn't really overlap a lot.
I think it was mostly him and Hayes, yeah.
Yeah. Couldn't really do anything.
No.
You know?
Especially like defense. Hayes was just getting alley-oops whenever he wanted to.
Yeah, so he was no match for him. Obviously, Jackson Hayes can, like, jump out of the gym. So, you don't really want to hold him to the standard of that. But just, like, you couldn't do anything against Jackson Hayes.
Yeah.
Like, anything at all. I don't know. It was disappointing.
It's like, he's not quite perimeter savvy enough to be, like, a stretch four or five. He's not quite good enough at handling the ball and shooting off the dribble or even catch and shoot. Defensively, he's like I said, really good effort in the right spots, but not super athletic, not super bouncy. He's kind of like that tweener role. It's hard to think, like, is he going to be a perimeter-focused guy who strictly covers on the perimeter and can switch a little bit? Do you want to try and use him as more of a big guy, like on other fours and even some fives? I don't know, but I don't think the Bucks care to spend the time and resources to find out anymore, and I think probably looking at a future Detroit Piston. Well?
yeah.
That's the cycle, man.
It is.
They already got Justin Patton. I'm sure they have roster spots.
They definitely will, because it is the Detroit Pistons. Future Piston DJ Wilson. But yeah, I just think, to summarize, DJ's performance in the scrimmage is just disappointing. Yeah. At least on my end.
Just a scattershot. And honestly, I don't even entirely blame him. It's just like you said, there's only so many minutes to go around on a team this good for a guy who has yet to consistently put it all together. It's just so hard.
It's a lesser Christian Wood.
Yeah, it is a similar, like, if DJ had played a lot in the G League and really put it together, it would be roughly the same situation. Like a less formed Christian Wood, yeah. And I don't know. I don't expect DJ to ever put up the numbers Christian Wood has put up. But
he's going to get paid.
Yeah, Christian Wood. I thought he meant DJ for a second. Yeah, Christian Wood absolutely is. Good for him, though.
Yeah, he was on, Zach Lowe and Chris Herring were talking about their Sixth Man of the Year candidates, and Zach Lowe was thinking about putting Christian Wood third on his ballot.
That's, I want to say nuts, but it's also awesome.
It's also like, you know, George Hill, obviously revised, but...
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
I don't get fired up about that award. It's so
like,
weird.
Like you said on the last episode, you want him to be considered, but you don't want him to win it. Like Wes Matthews and all defense.
I care more about Wes for all defensive teams. But yeah,
consideration, not even being on the team.
That's all I need. Just like a couple votes. I just want him on the ballot at the end of the day.
NBA, let us vote.
Seriously, we'll share a ballot. We'll do it on the podcast. Send it over.
Mm. Still got a day, I think, right? Balloting closes tomorrow?
Yeah, it's like sometime correctly. Tomorrow. Send it through in the early morning. We'll get to it. Mm-hmm. Probably.
So after DJ, we have two directions to go here. You said you wanted to save Sterling for last.
Oh, are you gonna? Are you?
He's still a young player. No.
Oh.
Dante.
Oh yeah. Well, I didn't think of him because he's actually a rotation player. But it's good to go Dante here because I was actually gonna start talking about him anyway, just because. Like, the one young guy who's going to get some consistent minutes is Dante, and it's because he has, like, shown the most real NBA stuff already. I don't think my prediction before the year, which feels like 500 years ago, was that Dante would, like, spend a ton of time with the G League working on his game, which I do think is, like, what the playbook should be for these young guys who don't have NBA minutes available. Like, I really wish that had been what happened with Sterling Brown a year or two ago, or longer, maybe even. It's been so long now. Never did, unfortunately, but we'll get to him. But Dante is just, like, good enough to play now, so he gets all those minutes automatically. Like, you're not going to cut down Dante's minutes to see if Sterling Brown could maybe be almost as good years later as Dante, who is younger, is right now. Like, it doesn't add up. So it's logical. I mean, there's not playing time for these other guys, and Dante's just been so good. And I don't know, his off-the-dribble stuff has been super intriguing to me, these scrimmages. He's been really confident and bold, and he's knocked some of them down. He's still, like, he's not like a dead-eye shooter yet, but I do love that he's confidently dribbling around screens, doing these tight pull-ups. It's the kind of thing that helps open up the offense, and I find it titillating, honestly.
I'm glad you bring that up. I saw you were tweeting about it during the game. Just the fact that Dante has an off the dribble game just completely changes Milwaukee's offense.
Yeah.
Because you're adding another creator into the offense, which, like, as if we've learned anything about playoff basketball, is just, like, obviously the playoffs are what matter here, so we're going to talk about it in that setting. So if you add just more creators on the floor during the playoffs, that's just... it can't go wrong unless they're like irrational confidence guys, but even that can go right sometimes if they're hot.
Yeah, we've seen it happen to the Bucks plenty of times, that's for sure.
Yeah, so just like if you get Dante in a spot where he's comfortable, you know, working off the dribble, hitting those pull-up threes, or at least taking those pull-up threes to at least have that sort of respect and gravity from the other players, which I don't think he's going to get at this point, but if he starts knocking them down, he will. And like he hasn't shot it particularly well in the scrimmages, like against Sacramento on Saturday. He went 4 of 9 from the field, 2 of 5 from 3. Against New Orleans tonight, 0 of 2 from 3 and 2 of 4 from the field overall. It was, like, disappointing, I guess, to say again, shooting-wise for Dante. But at least, like, the shots that he was taking were very encouraging. He seemed in control, which that's all you can ask for from a young player.
Yeah, and you didn't even mention it, but the defense has continued to be very, very, very good.
Oh, my goodness. Just watching Dante play defense is just, it's so just, it fills me with so much joy. Just watching him fly around the court trying to anticipate passes and, like, trying to block off passing lanes. And like I mentioned last episode about how he's, like, pre-jumping for alley-oops before it's even thrown.
Yes.
Just, like, it's so much fun. It's so much fun. He should get all defense consideration. I know Zach Lowe was saying he should get Sixth Man of the Year consideration, which is wild.
Yeah,
here.
Yeah.
But yeah, all defense. You're sticking up for Wes Matthews. I'm going to stick up for Dante.
I like it. I liked it a lot. No, my two Dante notes, I think the shooting will come along as he just gets more comfortable and gets the reps up. I think he will be able to. I don't think he's going to be like 44%, especially with the looks he's apparently very comfortable with, but just get him to like 37%, and that's just another dangerous weapon for the Bucks to help open things up. And defensively, he's good on the ball, he's really good off the ball. He's got to work on getting screened. He died on a couple screens tonight, and I don't know, it's the third scrimmage game, everyone looked dead, but Dante is literally like the energy guy. We've talked about this before. There's times when he will come into a game and everybody else picks up, so I kind of almost unfairly hold him to a higher standard. I still do acknowledge it was the third scrimmage game after 4 months off or whatever. But there was a couple times he would get screened and just kind of like throw his hands up like it was some sort of a foul. It may be, but not enough for it to get called in the NBA. And it's like, you got to get through those screens a little bit better, especially with all the drop coverage. But it's a nitpicky thing. I don't think
that might be a strength thing.
Yeah. Yeah. He's still a young player. I mean, he's not a rookie, of course, but might as well be a rookie.
Yeah, especially, like, he barely played last year. So, yeah, like you said, essentially a rookie. He just needs time, just a little bit of time. He has all of the skills there. Just if Dante can become something, that's just... Whew.
Well, he's got a good guy to learn from the screen thing in Bledsoe. And Shooting from Korver, perimeter defense from Bledsoe.
Playmaking from Chris and Giannis. Watch out, Bol Bol. Watch out, Michael Porter Jr. The real young stud here is Dante DiVincenzo.
Energy from Thanasis. He's got the Infinity Stones.
Yeah, he's got Pat's leaping ability.
put a little bit more control, just a little bit.
Yeah, he actually knows when to not jump.
Pat.
The first time Pat jumps at a 3-point attempt, honestly, I'm not even going to get upset. I'm just going to be like, I missed this.
It's going to be like now basketball is back.
It just feels right. Look,
look for 100 people to send that tweet as soon as it happens.
Yeah, it's okay. I'm making sure to say it preemptively.
Yeah, they covered your bases.
Because then when they're tweeted, we know they're listening and they're taking my ideas. So it's good.
Everyone who tweeted, they're stealing our IP. As far as I'm concerned, it's canon. It's Eurostep canon.
All you have to do is share the episodes with your friends and family.
Exactly.
So I guess now we can move on to your favorite, Sterling Brown.
I mean, if Dante's in the mix, saying my favorite is saying a lot. But it's a good tease. We'll get to Sterling Brown in just a second. But first, have you ever heard of DealDash.com? It's the best, most honest bidding site where you can win things you'd never expect at a price you'd never believe. They have over 1,000 auctions every day on electronics, appliances, beauty products, home decor, and even cars. Here's how it works. It's like an auction, but every item starts at $0 and only goes up 1 cent every time you bid. The kicker is that auction clock restarts after just 10 seconds. That means every time you bid, everyone else has 10 seconds to answer or the item is yours. If you go ahead and buy now, Deal Dash is offering our smart, attractive listeners an extra 100 free bids upon sign up on top of all of their other discounts. Go to DealDash.com and use offer code Euro. Listeners know it's G-Y-R-O, Euro, or DealDash.fm/Euro. That's DealDash, DealDash.fm/Euro for that free 100 bids. And while you're online thinking about finances, we're not talking about banks. That's boring. We're talking about Bet Online. Sports are back, and so are your chances to bet on your favorite teams and events. Major League Baseball is finally kicking off this week, and there's no better place to start wagering than our exclusive partners, Bet Online. Hopefully baseball is still here by the time you hear this episode. Check out all the odds, futures, and props to bet on, all available 24/7. And with the return of sports, BetOnline sat down with former pro players, if I can say that, Eddie George, Harold Reynolds, and seven-time NBA champ Robert Horry. See what they had to say on what it'll be like playing without fans in a series they're calling Fandemic. Visit betonline.ag for all your odds and up-to-date sports news. And remember to use promo code BLUEWIRE to receive your new welcome bonus when you sign up there today. I mean it, right now, after you're done listening to this episode, of course. That's promo code BLUEWIRE. BetOnline, your online wagering experts. Okay, let's talk about Sterling Brown.
Yeah, let's get to it. So we've seen him get a little bit of an extended run during these scrimmages, obviously because we've had no Eric Bledsoe, we've had no Pat Connaughton, so you know sort of the guard wing rotation is a little hampered. So we got to see Sterling play in that role. He hasn't really had that much of a, you know, strong impact this season. Little bit fallen out of the rotation, inconsistencies in his game led to that. But from what we've seen during these scrimmages, he still looks inconsistent.
Yeah. Yeah, especially this third game was, I think, easily the worst for him. And it's, I think there's a direct correlation with how much he was tasked with doing. I mean, he closed this game as the nominal point guard, and this is really where Frank Mason was sorely missed. Sterling Brown is not a point guard, and that's the thing. Like, on offense, you're just not seeing anything that makes you think you don't really want him doing more than, like, catch the ball on the wing. If you're open, shoot. If you can pump fake and drive and you have a lot of space, you can do that. Maybe make a good read off the drive, but just not a plus ball handler. You know, energy on defense, scrappy defender for sure, but just okay on that end. Not anything that really super impresses me on like a play-to-play basis. I like what Sterling can do now better than what DJ can do now. I think he is closer to being an NBA player. I think neither of them have been able to put it all together yet.
Yeah, it's just there were too many times that we saw he was sort of, he has tunnel vision at times. Yeah. There was one possession where, I'm sure you remember this, Ersan was getting like tip-in rebounds and just going up with it, getting like five rebounds per possession, and Sterling was trying to get it too. And obviously, like, I at this point, I know that Ersan's just going to go straight for the tippet whenever he can, because, you know, he wants to pad his stats, get those rebounds. I swear sometimes he intentionally misses.
100,000% yes.
Yeah. So, but the thing is, like, Sterling at least has a chance. Because Kyle Korver was wide open that entire
The longest consecutive seconds Kyle Korver's been open on one. He was literally there for like 30 seconds.
And Ersan eventually, you know, he was like, fine, whatever. And then he passed it out and Kyle Korver hit the wide open three. But like, given it's the Pelicans and they didn't do anything to try and guard Kyle Korver. But just like, Sterling, my guy, what are you doing? You're going up against like two or three defenders. Just like, what are you trying to do here? Yeah. Just like, just pass the ball out.
Yeah, he does come down with one of the rebounds, and I'm just like internally screaming because first Robin Lopez like, doesn't even look off, just doesn't even acknowledge a wide open Kyle Korver to pull a semi-contested three. And then Ersan misses a tip. And I think it was either after the first or second Ersan missed tip. Of course, there was like four in a row. Sterling does actually come like all the way down with the ball. And I'm like, all right, perfect. Just sling it out there. Korver's wide open. It's like a layup for him. And he tries to go all the way back up with it. And just ends up being Ersan fodder for a little while longer. It's just like, ah. No, I agree. There was some more plays too. And like, he just had no business trying to like go over slash around a set defender by the rim. And it went about as well as you would expect. And it's just like, I mean, I get there's not a lot going on, and some of his minutes, like, he's not out there with the premier players very often, which is tough, but just after some pretty solid decision-making, I thought, and this really just one play I keep thinking of where he kicked it back while he was driving in the Spurs scrimmage, just doing too much, and again, part of it on him, part of it, like, if he's, like, being inbounded the ball as the point guard, it's kind of already a lost situation, in my opinion.
Yeah, Sterling Brown, I know you, I think you tweeted this, not a point guard.
Yeah, no, not a point guard. I'm not seeing that.
Yes, it's okay. He can probably be a 2-3 still in this league. I think he can, if he can just catch and shoot, if that's his entire role, if he can just sit in the corner the entire time, like, that's great. He hits a lot of corner threes. So if you just ask him to do that, that's great. But unfortunately, when he tries to do a little more, he seems overtaxed.
I almost wonder if he should just like double. He's already like built, like he's a strong guy. I almost wonder if he should double down on that and try to make the move to like a 3-4 part-time 5 PJ Tucker thing.
Oh my god. That'd be something.
I think that's his best shot to being like a very plus impact player in the league. His wing defense is fine. I mean, just be like a rangy guy on defense who learn to operate without the ball a lot on offense. Like, set some screens, man. Like, figure out something. But the ball handling, I don't think it's going to get to a place where, and it's just hard. It's like, it's easy to say, like, just be a 3-and-D guy, but it's hard to have a 2 who you just don't really want moving with the ball very often.
Yeah. It's
kind of an offense clogger.
Yeah, it just doesn't have the skills to necessarily fit in to the Bucks offense.
I don't think so.
So, I don't know. Break glass in case of emergency, shooter / energy guy, I guess.
Yeah, I mean, it's not like a disaster if you put him in. I think
we've been saying, he can be a capable NBA player. Stick him in the corner, he'll hit a lot of corner threes.
Yeah.
And he'll play solid defense. Just don't ask him to handle the ball or like be involved in the offense in sort of any meaningful facet.
Yeah, I would expect, you know, if Pat C looks a little rusty at first, but gets into his usual form, which is
jumping
kind of inconsistent. Yeah, inconsistent in itself, but I would expect and be okay with Pat having all of the backup wing.
Especially because we know he's a proven playoff performer.
Yeah.
Like, George Hill and Pat Connaughton beat the Celtics, so like, just
it's true.
I'll never, that just the memes that came out of that Bleacher Report tweet, I benefited from it a lot.
But like, who's gonna stop them or whatever?
Oh yeah, and then it's just George Hill and Pat Connaughton. Like, that's just just so good. Just feels so good. Like, I don't know how else to describe it.
But, I don't know if you can.
Yeah, but yeah, it's just Pat Connaughton would easily be the favorite. Like, we haven't seen him play, and he's still the favorite to take Sterling Brown's role. Obviously, if he doesn't really look like his normal self, that's a problem. But I think Pat will just, he'll be just fine in that role with those minutes.
Yeah, I agree. So that's pretty much all the young guys. I think none of them shocked us. I don't think any of them, you know, grabbed onto a hole in the rotation and pulled themselves up into it. I would expect, you know, after like the first couple of games, hopefully everyone's up to speed, knock on wood, nobody has pulled or tweaked anything. Everyone's all healthy. I would expect the same old rotation we've seen. Bledsoe, Wes Matthews, Chris, Giannis, Brooke Lopez, and then Dante as the first wing off the bench. Good amount of Patsy, Marvin Williams, and Robin Lopez. I think that's going to be the main 9 for the Bucks, right? Did I miss anyone?
I think you're good.
I'm sure we'll see some Ursan, probably.
Yeah, we'll definitely see some Ursan.
No, Bud can't kick the habit, but I definitely don't think DJ or Sterling played to such an extent where Pat or even Ursan is in real danger of losing out on where they are currently in the rotation.
No, I don't really think that's going to happen at all. I guess from here, we can just sort of touch on some a little bit of just overall takeaways from these scrimmages.
Yeah, I guess that was kind of the goal. And we just, let's do all the young guys, which probably good. I mean, like, we'll have 8 scrimmages to, you know, probably not going to do post-game every, or not scrimmages, excuse, seeding games. Probably not going to do post-game of every seeding game, but we'll have a lot to talk about the regular rotation guys. This probably was our best chance to talk about some of the end of the bench. Oh, Tanasis is fun guy.
We love you.
Love Tanasis. Love the laugh. It's getting blown out. It's the smile's great. I did a poll of which laugh in the commercial the Bucks play 8 times a game is better, Giannis's or Tanasis's.
The Bucks need to change that music that they play in between.
It's not
like
good.
Timeouts. Like, just have something else. Just like have like a rotation. Not just the same thing over and over again.
The same looping.
Yeah. Hey, at least they got rid of the replays during live ball possessions. This game, but they learned a little.
They replaced it with shots of the terrible looking virtual fans during live ball possessions.
This might be a controversial take. During normal games, I hate looking at fans. Like, I don't get. I don't understand. Like, why? I don't need to see other people. Like, I want to focus on the basketball. Obviously, fans are good. You know, I'm a fan, right? But
yeah,
like I enjoy going to Bucks games as a fan. But just, I don't know. When I'm watching it on TV, I don't really care. So like, even when they like cut to fan reactions after like fun plays, unless it's like a memeable reaction, I don't really care. So just like, I don't see the point of cutting to the virtual fans in this environment. I don't know. That might just be a me thing.
If I get it, if they're like leaving or coming back to like from commercial and they just like, there's nothing happening yet, I don't really care that much. Do it then, throw a stat overlay over it,
sure,
whatever.
Sure. But just like a pet peeve of mine is just like after like a solid, like Giannis highlight or just any highlight, they cut to like fans cheering in the crowd. Like, okay, cool. Like, I don't know.
You sound like a grouch. I don't know if I'm with you on this one.
I'm sounding very get off my lawn right now. But it's just...
Old man Rohan
I don't know. It's not my thing.
Back in my day. The virtual fans look awful.
Yeah. Just,
I retracted my desire to be one of the 300 one of these games. They look silly. The superimposed seats behind them look silly. The guy who wore the XL shirt was pretty funny at least, but yeah, I don't, it they just look goofy to me. I'm not about it.
Yeah, I don't know. I'm not about it in general.
Yeah, you're clearly not.
But yeah, takeaways in general from these scrimmages. We did see in this game against the Pelicans that the low bro Disney magic might not have been there this game. That's probably why they lost, because they weren't close enough to the park. Because we had Brooke shooting 2 for 7 from 3. Robin shooting 1 of 3 from 3. It was a rough 3-point outing from the Lopez twins. Then again, it was a rough night overall for 3-point shooting from Milwaukee. No one made more than 2. Like,
well, one guy shot 2 of 3 at least.
Yeah, best shooter on the team was Giannis this game. which we love to see. We always love to see Giannis shooting and hitting threes consistently, because that's what normal NBA players do. It doesn't have to be a big deal every time someone hits a three. Hint, hint, wink, wink at other people.
It's a good point. I like I said this after the first scrimmage, and I still believe it. His shot looks way better.
It does.
His three-point shot that it has in a long time.
Yeah, I think it looks more fluid. It has a higher chance of going in when it leaves his hand. Like, at least it looks like that. So, which is always a good thing. So
this is another game where he missed. Oh no! Yeah, he missed more twos than threes in this game.
Did he really?
8 for 15 from the field, 2 for 3 from deep. Not a great game. Again, everybody looked unfocused. When I first, you mentioned the low bros. Yeah, just they were a little off, and like they were just trying some stuff that I was like, I get it's a scrimmage game, but God, Brook Lopez at one point pulled up from like 40 feet, like immediately in a possession. I was just like, Jesus, Brook, like. I get that it's the third scrimmage game, but I guess he's really just like, yeah, I'm just going to shoot it. We'll see what happens. There was a few shots like that. There was some moments where I was like, I don't think the guys are that focused. But yeah, Giannis's 3-point shot, I think, has been encouraging. I said I wouldn't talk about it, but he was 80% from the free throw line on 15 attempts today, getting to the line a lot, which I like. And after a disastrous start, has really pulled it back on the free throw shooting, which is, I've said for a while, as maybe more encouraging than the 3-point shot.
Definitely more encouraging, because he's going to be taking way more free throws in a game than threes.
Yes.
You know, realistically. So if he's shooting well from the free throw line, it doesn't matter what he really shoots from three. Like, he can go 0 of 5 from three in a game, but if he's going like 10 of 11, 12 for 16, 12 for 15 he was tonight, but even like somewhere close to that, that's what really matters. Because you're getting like, we were both confused that he had 30 points in this game.
Yeah.
12 of them were from the free throw line. So you just, he always gets fouled. We know this, whether it gets called every time or not is a different question. But he does get hacked a lot. He does go to the line a lot every single game and will continue to go to the line every single game many a times. So if he can get that free throw stroke down at a high clip, that's what really matters.
Yeah. No, I agree. Obviously, both are good. And we'll certainly take
both.
Yes,
obviously,
but...
both are good. Like, this game, 2 of 3 from 3, 12 of 15 for the free throw line. That's great. Like, obviously, both would be ideal, you know?
Oh, yeah.
We're just saying, the free throw. If you get the free throw, the three doesn't really matter, you know?
Yeah, it's like a luxury at that point. Just another encouraging thing. Chris also just not able to make. He was 0 for 4 from deep today. A lot of guys just not shooting well, but maybe a little bit of fatigue too from like kind of not the layoff and coming back, maybe catching up a little bit. But 8 for 8 from free throw, he remains just impeccably accurate on those and just getting to the line more and more, even in a slog of a game. He was drawing contact, which
is,
I like to see a lot.
Great to see. Great to see Chris attacking the basket. I mentioned this last episode, but just opens up his game even more and opens up the rest of the team even more. You love to see it.
Yeah. I want to cover two things quickly as we try to avoid an hour on this pod where earlier we were like, oh, what a boring game. I wonder if I have anything to talk about. As always, how are you concerned at all about George Hill's 3-point shooting slump?
I mean, a little. Considering
and just all around shooting today, he was 1 for 7 from the field.
And it seemed like he was sort of avoiding shots at times too.
Yeah,
like he could have clearly taken a shot at some points, but he seemed kind of adverse to sort of shooting the basketball. So it does concern me a little bit, considering that even towards the end of the season before the hiatus, his 3-point shooting took like a plunge. He still remains like the best 3-point shooter in the league percentage wise, but he's just been on a down spell recently and it's just continuing. Who knows? It's still a scrimmage. He is an older guy, so, you know, getting back into game shape might be a little bit of a struggle for him. So we have to take that into consideration. So if he gets back into the swing of things, 3-point shooting should go up. So I wouldn't be concerned yet. If the trend continues as we reach the postseason, then I would start to get more concerned. It's a little concerning right now, but it doesn't seem like that big of a problem.
No, I agree. I think it's like they have 10 to 12 games still before things are really important. If we're at like the 8th or 9th game of those and he's still just really unable to make shots, then I'll start to be concerned. For right now, I'm like, just let's give it a week or two here and see how we're looking then. I don't think it's going to hold. I certainly hope not, but we shall see. I'm just going to hold out hope. I mean, we saw the guy hit nearly 50% for a lot of the season. I don't think he's going to regress so hard to the opposite direction for the entire bubble. At least, I certainly hope not.
Yeah, I don't think that'll happen either.
No. So, Kyle Korver has been playing a lot and doing a lot. And I had some words for Sterling Brown, who I think was a little overtaxed. I haven't even thought to mention it. I guess I don't think we're going to see any of this kind of stuff from Kyle Korver in games that matter. I certainly hope not, but like, we've seen him moving with the ball in transition. We've seen him operating on pick and rolls, just like doing a lot of things that aren't spot up shooting. And I don't think he should really be doing much at all that's not spot up shooting. We see Korver Dimes. He's a good passer, but I think he's a good passer like when he gets the ball in motion, like as part of the offense, not when he is like navigating around screens trying to break down deep. I just don't think that's his game. And we saw way too much of that from my comfort level across these scrimmages. I don't think it's a thing that's going to last. We've talked about how many wings the team is down, but goodness, I hope that's not like a plan for real meaningful games.
I hope not. Actually, I hope a little for my own entertainment because it's always funny. But
oh, you are playing with fire.
Has he done anything so wrong? Okay, I'm kidding. But we've seen Giannis and Chris get their minutes reduced. Obviously, Bledsoe hasn't even played. So just like, you know, your primary ball handler is not playing as much leads to point Sterling, leads to Kyle Korver doing non-spot-up shooting things. So when we get into normal rotation, I would think that goes away. I would really hope that goes away. I don't think it'll be a problem. I think that'll definitely... that'll be a problem that gets mitigated by actually, you know, normal rotations by normal ball handlers.
Yeah. Yeah, I agree.
He has been playing a lot. The 24 minutes in the last two scrimmages at like whatever 51 or whatever Kyle Korver is. 38.
He gets older every time we guess.
38 actually, but like 62 in basketball
in NBA
age.
Years.
It's a lot of minutes for Korver.
Yeah, and it caught up, man. 6 points today, I think, on 6 total shots and 4 turnovers. Yeah, he's 2 for 6 from 2 for 6 from the field and 2 for 6 from deep. The same 6 shots, all 3s this time. But yeah, 4 turnovers, just 1 assist. Ugly game. Ugly game for everyone. I don't want to single out Kyle Korver or anybody, but again, just felt like he was being asked to do a lot more than he ever would. And I think there's just an understanding of, like you said, we're not going to play Giannis 40 minutes a game. We're not going to play Chris that much. No Bledsoe. A little bit of Dante, who plays a lot with the starters, I think, to get the more cohesion with those three guys, especially. So it just kind of had to happen that way, unfortunately, for poor Sterling and poor Kyle Korver. But, oh well. Is there anything else pressing from the scrimmages you want to break down?
I think we've covered it. Really?
Yeah, between the last podcast and this one, the last one more general, this one a lot of the young guys, which again, I feel like that works.
It does. I feel like we've gotten the gist of the scrimmages because, you know, we haven't seen a lot of basketball yet, and these are essentially preseason games that they don't really care about too much. So we'll see when the games start counting whether things change in terms of like depth, in terms of the rotation, in terms of like actual performance on the court, attitude, all that. But no, I think we're good from the scrimmages.
Yeah, I would say just generally, I think we'll see. We're still going to see, I think, pretty much every starter every game from here on out as the and kind of sort of our minutes ramp up. Unless, obviously, like there's a back-to-back, we might see some guys off on the back-to-back. Or if somebody's just like beat up and sore, like, there's no reason to not rest somebody. But I just mean, like, I think we'll see more slow minutes ramp ups. I didn't expect to see Chris or Giannis play all 3 games, scrimmages, based on the reporting early, but they did, and they all played like at least 23 minutes-ish per game. So I think we'll see all the main guys, at least most of them, for every game from here on out, depending on Bledsoe and Pat coming back. But yeah, I would expect rotations to get more and more normal as we go.
Yeah, for sure. And as we go, I guess we do have regular season games on Friday.
Oh, yeah. Celtics.
Mm-hmm. So, yeah.
How do we feel?
I'm not really scared of Boston. I've said this before. I don't think they're a good matchup for Milwaukee at all.
Yeah.
Especially when you want to get, like, you know, guys like Jason Tatum going, he can't really get, I saw Jackson Frank on Twitter was doing breakdowns of Milwaukee's pick and roll defense. And he was showing how, Jason Tatum was kind of struggling a bit, when Eric Bledsoe was, you know, fighting hard over threes, getting his pull up three game out of the question. And then Brooke Lopez coming up on him in the paint to make mid rangers more difficult. Just like he dictates where this team will go, like where Boston will go. And he is not in for a fun time against Milwaukee. Chris Middleton usually puts him in jail, as he does with most players. and he will abuse him on the other end. So I don't really think Boston is that much of a problem. So yeah. I'm expecting Milwaukee to come out triumphant on a weird timing of games. Like, what, 5:30?
Oh, goodness.
5:30 on ESPN, I think, on Friday?
Well, at least it's just national.
It's wild.
I'll take the early bedtime, man.
Yeah, I mean, sure, yeah. I'll take that. But also, it's like, it's a weird time. So, yeah. I don't know. I don't know how I feel about it.
I think that's going to be the new normal in the bubble, though, with kind of games going throughout the day a lot of the time.
Yeah, I guess.
We're going to have some weird start times.
It's going to be weird. It's going to be like all at least afternoon, though, right?
Yeah. We're not starting at 9 a.m.
Oh, God.
I really hope not. I don't think so.
No, we definitely... No, we're definitely not doing that.
Hopefully we don't have to skip any nap times, us or Giannis.
Yes, we can't get... The Giannis naps are critical, as we've seen by matinee games in the past. Yes. But yeah, what is your prediction for this Friday?
Pretty much the same. I mean, we've seen Jason Tatum starting off slow, and this is something that a lot of smart NBA watchers have pointed out. Like, he's good. Like, he's been good all year, but the recent elevation of him perceived to be like a superstar, like a lot of people think better than Chris Middleton. He's been shooting like 48-50% from three for a lot of that time, and he's not doing that so far in the bubble. And I just think we might see him sort of on offense back down to that like Brandon Ingram level guy, which maybe is a little better, maybe he's a little worse, just strictly on offense. Tatum is much, much better on defense. Everyone will point this out, but I don't think those two players are that far apart on offense. Honestly, Ingram might be a little better right now just on offense. And like a fine player, a good player, not good enough of a player to swing a series against Giannis and the Bucks, who have two better players. And like, again, we've talked about this. You're just asking Marcus Smart to do so much. If he's like your only real strategy for stopping Giannis from getting to the rim over and over and over. And one of the other things from the bubble, I guess I've noticed, is Giannis has made some good passes, as he has all year, breaking down defenses on the drive. He got a little lazy with that in this last game. But like, I think the Bucks will pick apart Boston when it really comes down to it. So yeah, I'm not concerned. And I'll officially join you in fearing the Raptors more than the Celtics.
Ooh.
Yeah,
okay.
Late flip, completely okay. Different pod, but I'm there.
Hey, and I'm glad I could have convinced you. Thank you for admitting I was right this whole time.
It's all yours.
But yeah, I think the Raptors are definitely more of a threat. It's also fun to hate on Boston. It's so much fun.
Yeah.
So much fun.
Boston deserves nothing good, man.
They don't.
They've had enough.
It's, if their baseball team is showing anything, it's that they do not deserve any good right now.
Facts.
What did they lose, like 15-1 or something yesterday?
I haven't followed it that closely, but
I only knew about it because it was so egregious.
Because it's Boston. Everybody wants to see Boston get beat up, man.
Yeah, it's I'm not any different.
No, same here.
So I think that's it from us here. Do we have anything else we wanted to hit this episode?
No, I think that just about covers it. I mean, we got some more takeaways from the scrimmage games, even this last one, which is a bummer. We looked ahead quickly to Boston, who I don't think either team is going to go full throttle. I don't think either team really needs to, and everyone's going to be careful with the first quote-unquote real game back, especially after some days off, I think, for both teams. So I wouldn't expect like a hotly contested contest, but who knows? I mean, these are obviously rivals with some postseason history. Bucks wiping the floor with the Celtics in five games last year, the most recent example, the only one worth talking about, in my opinion. But yeah, we'll have real basketball Friday early evening, and even realer, I guess. And I'm looking forward to it.
Yeah, me too. It's gonna be good to get back into the swing of things against like an actual opponent that could be a postseason matchup potentially. Because you know we've been playing against teams in the West, not teams that we could see in the postseason for Milwaukee. So it'll be nice to see. But I guess for this episode, that's all we have. So I'd like to say thank you for listening to this episode of the Eurostep here on the Blue Wire Podcast Network. If you did enjoy the show, please let others know. Tell all your friends, tell all your family to listen to this show if you did really enjoy it. Also, leave a rating and subscribe on your podcast platform of choice. Really helps us out. Make sure you're checking out all of the content being put out across the Blue Wire Network. Stay safe out there, everyone, and we will talk to you next time.